Hey everybody, welcome to yet another episode of What a Hell of a Way to Die. Gentlemen.
So I'm doing great. It's weird cold weather in New York this weekend. Many of us are breaking out our winter clothes early just in time to, I'm sure, have to then turn around and have like a 90 degree day when it reverses itself. But yeah, it was like 55 degrees on Thursday morning, but climate change is not real. Just so you know, it's a lie. It's made up by the Chinese.
All right. So first, a little bit of house cleaning or housekeeping. We're going to go ahead and do a touch of gloating. Nate wrote about it for the website. But Nate, go ahead and give us an update on our American propaganda podcast we did.
Oh, I'm excited. Yeah. So it was there was a local affiliate in Colorado Springs published a story on Thursday afternoon stating that they had actually gotten in touch with the authors of that Social Justice Weekly newsletter that we discussed on the previous show. And they had confessed that they had done this as a hoax to expose the hypocrisy of the left, as they put it, that they claimed that they were justified in doing so because people reached out to that email address and said, oh, I agree, I hate veterans. Also, you know, people freaked out. So basically, it was like a great big episode of South Park, which is bad and dumb, as we all know, because South Park basically is the show in which if you have opinions, you're an idiot, and the answer is always in the middle. And but here's the kicker. They also said, and this is said to the affiliate, so I don't know if there's going to be some expose down the road by a larger venue journalism thing, but they said they were both veterans, that there were two of them, and that they were both military veterans. It didn't say what branch of service, it didn't say if they were combat veterans, but it did. They did claim to be veterans. And what shocked me about this was how little traction this got. How if you search for the original author, the original document, or the first stories breaking it, you get this bevy of hits on Google. If you search for this next post saying it was a hoax, literally the only one you get is that, you know, NBC or whatever affiliate in Colorado Springs and no other mention. So the sad part is, although it's wrong, although it was totally proven to be a hoax, one assumes that in the minds of most dipshits on the internet, the original thing is the truth. That's what they're going to remember, and no one's going to care about the correction or retraction.
Yeah, and I'd also like to point out that I love that their justification for this is, well, people agree with us. Fucking people think that we didn't land on the moon. People think that the Earth is flat. Just because, like, you put something out on the internet and dipshits agreed with you doesn't suddenly make you not a dipshit. Like, your opinion and whatever you think, like, oh, well, people agree with this. Yeah, you got some Tumblr teens that replied to an email. But, hey, guess what? Maybe all of those were me trying to troll you back. So how about that? It doesn't fucking matter because it was all stupid and unnecessary and really just shot everybody in the dick. There was nobody comes away from this as a winner.
And something I'd point out, too, is that if you go down the list, and I wrote about this in the piece that we should plug, we actually have a website and we can publish on it. So wrote a quick piece about that and published it on Friday once I got the news. But if you go down the list of where these stories appeared, what you find is like an itemized list of right-wing outrage outlets, whether or not they're veteran-oriented or just right-wing nutjob-oriented, you know, gunfucker and flagfucker-oriented. Every single one of them reported on this, it seems. The Blaze did, IJR did, This Ain't Hell's forums, you know, Patriot Moms shit, like Popular Military, Breitbart, Fox, basically every outlet you can think of that trades in the currency of angry white people online reported on this, and not a one of them has posted a retraction or a correction. I was trolling some of the authors from Breitbart or IJR and whomever, but of course they're not going to, because why would they? Because the whole thing is, it's get clicks and page views and eyeballs on your content. Whether or not you do that in a really dishonest way that poisons relations between people in this country doesn't matter. What matters to you is how many, you know, cost per clicks you're getting from your advertisers. That's really it.
Yeah, and I would just like to say, though, if you are a person who comes into a classroom with your ranger bag and says oorah or hoo-ah in the middle of class, you don't deserve to be in a four-year class at all. You need to fuck off. Hey, we just lost...
See, I don't know. Yeah, so I don't really... the thing is, everybody has their own weird transition, and I didn't recognize this, but, you know, I've talked with a number of my soldiers who got out of the military and then went to college, and I realized then how much of a benefit I had by having gone to college first, in the sense that I was also just a dipshit 19-year-old in college. I wasn't, you know, a combat veteran. I wasn't a, you know, guy who'd spent years in a much more tightly wound organization. And one of my soldiers told me this story that, you know, he had this happen to him that he showed up in class and he had no veteran orientation, no anything like that. You know, he just showed up in class because it was his first day of class in Arizona, some, you know, state school. So he's, you know, a sergeant. He's an E5 when he gets out. And he's thinking to himself, okay, I'm in class. It's like back being in the Army. So starts up class, a guy next to him falls asleep. Like, it's the first day of class. And this kid sitting next to him falls asleep at his desk. So my soldier reaches out and, like, taps this kid on the shoulder. He's like, hey, buddy, wake the fuck up. Like he would do to a private. And this kid just looks at him with utter terror and just, like, storms out and never comes back. And my friend realized, he's like, wow, did I do the wrong thing? He's like, yeah, you kind of did, because you can't treat, you know, the Army and college the same way. But at the same time, like, you had only to read that article and that flyer and realize that it was trying to yank people's chains. Like, there are problems that veterans face. I have plenty of stories, you know, where I've just watched my former soldiers rant on Facebook about how, like, they got kicked out of class for being assholes and they were proud of it. You know, and it's like they were basically being that angry veteran in class. There are issues that guys face, you know, soldiers face, veterans face being, you know, reintegrated. But what was in that flyer was just meant to be the kind of thing to make your racist uncle on Facebook mad. It had no substance.
Fucking Marine Todd going down there and punching all of the professors in the face for Jesus. Because, and if you don't know the Marine Todd is my favorite, like, fake thing that was invented by the right, where basically, like, this libtard professor stands on a box and says, if God is real, he'll come and knock me off of this box. And Marine Todd, who was in the Marines, goes down and he punches the professor in the face and said, God was busy protecting our troops overseas, so he sent me. And everybody cheers because Marine Todd, you know, punched the libtard in the face. And this is
and
like
he also
the,
he went flying like it was something out of an anime, like Fist of the North Star. The professor didn't just fall over; he literally went flying across the room into the stratosphere.
Yeah, Marine
and then
Todd
just erupted, and
Marine Todd went Super Saiyan, and in this like fucking Aesop's fable of the right wing, fucking knocks this guy through a chalkboard or something, and like, you know, it's painfully fake, but like is constantly retweeted. But Marine Todd definitely, you know, deserves to be in a four-year play. He needs to go to Berkeley for free to punch every liberal professor in the face.
Well, and that's the thing that's so amazing about it too, is that I can't believe that anybody would do this intentionally in order to, I don't know if it was like some Breitbart turd shit. I don't know if it was that these guys are claiming to be veterans because they somehow think that that's going to, what's the right word here? That's going to somehow inoculate them against criticism. But the whole thing just, it's so disingenuous. And what shocked me was there are a number of people whose opinions I respect on, you know, the war and the news, who looked at this and were like, wow, this is once again evidence of the civil military divide. Like, wow, the left is just so disconnected from the realities of the world. How can the left be so hung up on identity politics? Wow, they really missed the mark. And it's like, it's a fucking fake letter, dude. Like, are you for real?
Yeah, and that would go much deeper into another conversation about why the centrist Democrats are quick to label anti-fascists as the actual fascists. You can check on mine and Nate's timeline to see us consistently dunking on Eli Lake for having ridiculous claims of how he's the real Antifa because he wrote that Iraq deserves to get blown up and that Iraqis deserve to die. And somehow that makes him a troop. So we won't get too far into Eli Lake because we'll just be angry for fucking 50 minutes.
I have to ask though, Adrian, since you are the dad of the group here, Maybe you were a little bit more aware of what was going on in the news when the Iraq war was getting sold, because I was in high school. I mean, I was a senior in high school and I really didn't pay attention to the news at all. And I've heard Eli Lake's name associated with the whole Ahmad Chalabi thing, but I don't really know much about it. And I, to be perfectly honest, I haven't done what I usually do before an episode and, you know, Wikipedia'd the shit out of something. And so I figure if you have some points on that or any sort of general thoughts, it would be useful to hear them. But yeah, I don't want to belabor that point because Eli dunks on himself nonstop and there's no point in wasting time. Yeah, so we were going to talk about something else. We were going to talk about chicken shit.
Yeah,
Francis.
We're going to talk about as the phenomenon that we call the bored sergeant major. I don't know how it is because, like, you know, I go through my reservist time and I very rarely ever run into any sergeants major. But for some reason, when I was in Iraq, they were just fucking everywhere. And when they're everywhere, they're doing nothing but fucking with your shit. Like, they're constantly, like, there's the ones that do shit. There's, like, the command sergeant majors, sergeants major. I'm going to keep fucking that up. There's the command sergeants major who have command positions and have troops to look after and have wars to fight. And then there's, like, these weird ones that, like, don't do anything other than, like, gig you for, like, having the wrong hat on or, like, your gig line is wrong. Like, there's always, like, some fucking E8 somewhere that's just like, I have nothing better to do than to fuck with a 20-year-old's day right now.
Well, so yeah, you know, in a battalion, you have your command sergeant major and your operations sergeant major. And for those of our audience who aren't familiar with the military rank system, effectively, when you get to a certain point as an enlisted soldier, you will not promote past the rank of, you know, in the grade of E9. So imagine E1 is your buck private, brand new private. E9 is a sergeant major. But as you stay in the military, as you continue to promote, you can't go, there's no E10, but there are senior positions. There are, you know, you have a battalion sergeant major, you have an operations sergeant major, you have a brigade operations sergeant major, you have numbers of sergeant major positions in, you know, the brigade or division level. And not all of those are command positions. In fact, very few of them are command. Most of them are administrative. And so what you have is this cadre of E9s, of sergeants major, who aren't, you know, beating feet to the next formation because they don't have a formation. They're part of the formation. They're part of a brigade or division staff or even higher, Lord knows. And they are obsessed with finding things wrong that soldiers are doing and chewing their asses about it. And don't get me wrong, soldiers do dumb things. And sometimes you just, when I was in Korea, you basically had to walk everywhere. And I kept encountering soldiers doing some really dumb shit. And I just had to pull them aside and stop them. An officer, I don't really care about getting saluted. But when a soldier salutes me with his left hand because he's got a bag of Burger King in his right hand, and believe me, this happened a number of times, I had to pull him aside. Like, who the fuck was your drill sergeant, dude? Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Those kinds of things. Now, I'm pretty nice about it compared to most sergeants major. And as Francis was saying, it becomes this kind of cult of squaring people away because of these asinine little things. And it's strange how that has kind of created a culture in the military of being obsessed with little details, even in justifying that obsession with the argument that little details will save your life, but then obsessing over things that totally have no bearing on anything besides you being an asshole.
Yeah, my favorite was the when I was in Iraq, going to the chow hall, and it was light out. It was still light, and we passed by a sergeant major who said, "Hey, where are your guys' reflective belts?" Me and my battle buddy, and my buddy reached down to the leg pocket, pulled out his, you know, his reflective belt, threw it on, and to me, I was like, "Oh, I didn't. It's back in my room." He's like, "Well, you're not going to get into the chow hall until you have it." Now it's still light out, but he's gigging me this because he says, "By the time I'm done eating, it will be dark out." And I'm just like, "Seriously, I'm just like, you know, five chews that way." And he's like, "Yeah, so you should be able to go get it pretty easy." And then you get into the chow hall, and you've got another sergeant major who's in there. And what he's doing is he's making sure everybody washes his hands, which is good. We need, you got to have somebody. And usually when I went in there, like an E5 that didn't have anything better to do, who just sits there and says, "Hey, you didn't wash your hands." Now, granted, you really, you know, you could just tell them to fuck off and go do whatever you wanted. But like, I'm in Iraq. Shit's dirty here. I should wash my hands before I start cramming food in my mouth. But when you have a sergeant major there who's not only doing that, but also making sure that you're not too sweaty. Not too sweaty in Iraq is a really fucking hard thing to gauge. But yeah, they're just like, "No, we don't want you to come in here all gross and sitting down." And it's like, "I don't know if you noticed, Sergeant Major, but it is 125 degrees outside. No, you're too sweaty. You need to go change, or you need to get your thankfully, the nice ones would let you get your shit to go, get a little styrofoam container and take that back. The other ones would literally make you go change your top. It was fucking incredible.
And I think that's kind of a common phenomenon when you're deployed too, or at least in these, the deployments of the past 15 years, 16 years, in the sense that there is this huge otherworldly divide between soldiers and service members who go outside the wire, who leave base to go on combat missions, versus the ones whose jobs keep them indoors on the base the entire time, the sort of inside the wire, outside the wire, on the FOB, off the FOB kind of people. And what Francis has just described, I have seen numerous times in which a person has freaked out at me or my soldiers because we just rolled in the gate or just literally gotten dropped off at the helicopter landing zone after having done a mission. We're going to the chow hall. And even if it's something along the lines of just we're getting to-go plates for the platoon, it doesn't matter. You're getting thrown out of this place and told you're not allowed to eat because your uniforms are too dirty. I mean, I had to step in and argue with an NCO. I wasn't a sergeant major. I wouldn't have won the argument with a sergeant major even if I was right. But as a first lieutenant, I had to step in and argue with a staff sergeant because my friend's platoon, who was based in a different province, had been out for 10 days when they had only packed for one because they were told they were going to be out for one day. This was a Bergdahl mission. And they got in contact a number of times. They were filthy. Like, their gloves were ripped open. Like, their glasses were super scratched up from just, being back and forth all the time. Like, my buddy, the platoon leader, his ass was just hanging out. Like, their uniforms looked orange because of just how dirty they were. And the guys, this staff sergeant is telling them they can't come in. And I'm just like, "Sergeant, these guys were just on a mission taking contact for 10 days. They're not on this FOB. They don't have clean clothes to put on. Like, just let them get their fucking chow and get out of here." But this obsession with these tiny little details and things along those lines, and once again, this notion that you always obey the letter of the law and never the spirit of it, that is the sort of, to me, that's the essence of military discipline, is stupidity in service of the letter of the law. And I'm not the first person to observe this. There's a very famous book by a guy named Paul Fussell called Wartime Understanding and Culture, I think, in the Second World War. But he devotes a whole chapter to talking about the level of stupidity and how for people who got drafted, that stupidity was a new thing. They'd never experienced anything like that. And so much of the writing about World War II written by from the perspective of draftees was about like the dumb, absurd shit that the military makes you do.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to also is that it's like having your own little fiefdom. Like when you go overseas and they say, "Okay, they come to me and they say, "All right, Sergeant Horton, you're in charge of, the print shop or whatever," because I'm a 46 Quebec. I'm a print side public affairs person. If I got deployed again, if there wasn't an E7, I would be the guy who's in charge of all the other Quebecs. So, there's people who, like, if you did that to me, I'd be like, "Okay, how do I get... How do we complete the mission? How do we get done what we need to get done while, everybody is also not stressed and also I do as little work as possible because I have five people underneath me?" That's always my, I always tell people, put a lazy person in charge, they'll find the lazy way to do it, but also get shit done. But you'll also have people who are like, "Okay, I'm in charge, which means I am the king here." And for some reason that like worms their way into the heads of these people. Like, and I've come across this especially with officers. Like, they get to that field grade part, they get to like 04, 05. Like, I had a really shitty 04 that I had to deal with in Iraq one time. And one of those guys that would like step on the backs of everybody else to get his next promotion, which he did get. I saw him on one of those fucking Army Strong commercials one time while I was drunk and I had a PTSD episode. But you know, they get in charge and they're like, okay, I'm in charge of all these people. And rather than say, how do we do this for the big picture? It's how do I, you know, do this for me? And, you know, you're going to run into that, you know, from the junior enlisted when you put an E4 in charge. And I'm not saying all of them, but you will see it happen with E4s in charge of E3s, E2s, and E1s. You'll see it happen with, like, I'm sure, Nate, you've seen especially shitty first and second lieutenants who get put in charge of stuff, and they're just like, all right, I'm the swinging dick here. Like, if I came across at 17 years and a staff sergeant in the military with two deployments under my belt, if I ever had a butter bar try to swing his dick at me, I would fucking cut it off and mail it back to his fucking parents. His parents that are probably still like, oh, he's still on our health insurance because he's fucking 22 years old. Like, that's...
So that does happen. I think that more often than not, I mean, I've seen guys come in and try to square away their NCOs when they're brand new lieutenants. More often than not, though, what I find is that they're... lieutenants are often... They want to be friends with their soldiers, and so they wind up getting walked on by their NCOs. I think that's a really hard line to walk, and I think that I would be remiss if I pretended like I was this super officer who never had problems with that, because you are basically the same age as your team leaders, and oftentimes you may come from the same part of the country as them. So there's issues with that. But I think getting to your larger point about describing that with officers, I think there are people who have advanced in their careers because of their ability to sort of play the game and regurgitate things that they think they're supposed to say. And they're the kind of people who lack the ability to discern a real crisis from an imaginary one. And in the military, and this is more directed towards our civilian audience, in the military, there really is this notion that little details matter, that, I mean, if I don't have a highlighter in my pocket, and I just have a pen or a pencil, I'm probably okay. If I get fucked up in a combat situation and I don't have a pen, like, it might even be okay as long as somebody has a pen. I mean, we don't always need one, but, you know, it's good to have one. Now, if I have 50 cals and 50 caliber machine guns and I don't have a headspace and timing gauge at all, and we're out on a combat mission, that could be really bad, because you basically can't do a barrel change without a headspace and timing gauge. This is a thing that allows, you got to realize, the 50 caliber machine gun, which we still use, it's a holdover from around the World War II era. It's a very old piece of equipment. And whereas when you shoot a machine gun, the barrel gets hot as fuck. In some cases, it'll start glowing. And at a certain point, you keep shooting through that hot-ass barrel, you will get to the point where you will burn the barrel out and it's unusable. So you have to switch barrels when you're in a, you know, suppressive fire, long-term, you know, shooting bullets downrange kind of situation. Now, if you swap out the barrel on an M249 SAW or an M240 Bravo medium machine gun, you basically, it's plug and play. There's some things you push and turn and twist and such, but like, you take the barrel out, you put it on the barrel bag, take the other barrel, you put it in, you turn, you snap, you fire. It's not a big deal. As long as you put the things in the right place, they will fire. Whereas a 50 caliber machine gun, you have to basically check the, and I don't know the particulars. I was an infantryman, but I was not an enlisted soldier in the infantry. You basically are checking the spacing within the sort of firing mechanism of the 50 caliber machine gun. And if it's wrong, one of two things can happen. Either it won't fire, it won't reload rounds after, so it becomes a great big ass hunting rifle, or it'll explode. Now, the catastrophic explosion thing doesn't happen very often, but long story short, the difference between being able to fire a 50 caliber machine gun and not is a huge difference in a combat scenario. And so, like, for example, that's a detail that matters. You've got to have one. Have a headspace and timing gauge. Have multiple ones. You need those things. You need to have encryption on your radio. You have to make sure you check your encryption on your radio. Otherwise, you're getting overrun, you know, by marauding gangs of guys on motorcycles, which I haven't seen with my eyes, but I've had know of situations where it's happened. And all of a sudden, you don't have your crypto loaded on your radio. You can't talk to anybody. You can't talk to anyone. So you'd better start setting some trees on fire and waving semaphore flags, because no one's going to help you. So, like, having those details right matters. But the chicken shit mentality in the military, unfortunately, is to treat literally every situation, every waking, breathing moment of your life as though the things that are happening in that moment have the same importance as your ability to shoot, to move, and to communicate. And so what you find is a lot of I'm not gonna say they're weak NCOs and officers, but they're people whose critical thinking skills are not in top form. They're just really good at yelling loudly and kind of regurgitating the thing that you're supposed to, the acronyms and phrasings and things you're supposed to learn. The kind of person who will tell you to orientate yourself to this sand table. Those are the kinds of people who unfortunately are going to get in your shit and tell you that you're the reason why soldiers get killed downrange because, God forbid, I don't know, you wore a black PT cap to do PT in the morning versus a gray one.
Yeah, and you'll find this, you know, it's different between garrison and on the war, you know, when you're on the front or when you're outside of the wire. Even if you're, you know, garrison, when I say garrison, I even mean Kandahar or Bagram or Bayop, which are all like, yes, they are in war zones, but they are very garrison. I mean, I was in Bagram. Okay, I get my B's right. I was in Bagram, Afghanistan in 2004, and it was still pretty garrison. We saluted people. We had to have clean uniforms and shit. But, you know, you go outside the wire, things, you know, change. And the mark of a really good, you know, leader, a really good NCO, really good officer, is the one who can say, okay, we're in garrison. You need to have your hair cut. You need to be clean shaved. Okay, we've been out on a patrol for the last day. I don't give a fuck if you guys are sweaty and if you haven't shaved or anything. Don't bother with it. Like, I've seen people come back, you know, I've seen people come back from like being out for a week, being out for 10 days. They come back, they've got, you know, that full on beard and everything. And, you know, it come back, okay guys, we're back in garrison. Go fucking change. You know, take yourself 3 hours. Go get changed, go get showered, go get shaved, go get shit taken care of, you know. But like while we're out there getting fucking plugged and shit, while we're at an observation point for the last 3 to 5 days, it's not even worth it. But you are going to find sergeants majors and you're going to find officers, you're going to find captains and lieutenants who, like, look, you need to make sure that in between taking fire that you're making sure that you're getting your shit shaved up. And like, it's incredible to see. Like, I understand it from a disciplinary point. I understand we went through basic training. We all shaved our heads. We all shaved. We all get to a, this is what, we are all the same. We're all wearing green, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's that break you down to build you back up. Because, you know, you want some kind of individualism inside of the military, but you don't want everybody to be a fucking maverick or anything like that. You have to be able to give and take orders, basically. So you don't want anybody going completely outside of the mold, but also at the same time, you have to make sure that you're not fucking your soldiers over by, you know, just basically fucking their morale over. Like, if I'm already getting shot at, don't fucking come at me, tell me I need to shave behind the water buffalo. That's insane.
Well, something I'd point out, too, is that people seem to think that based on a kind of popular culture notion about hardness and hard training and how when men were hard, et cetera, talking about, you know, the brown boot army and full metal jacket style Marine Corps and things like that, is this notion that that level of fixation and stupidity is going to make people into better soldiers or better, you know, that'll somehow improve unit cohesion. And what I think is, I mean, I see the argument that you have to be strict about training, but when you're not in training, when you're in an actual combat scenario, that kind of strictness and insanity, when it defies common sense, it doesn't create unit cohesion. It doesn't improve morale. It doesn't make you a better soldier. It just makes people sad. Yep. It makes them sad. It makes them not want to be soldiers. It makes them hate their lives and hate their jobs. And to me, that's a bigger risk when you're in a long-term combat scenario, then the risks that most of these stupid corrections might create for you. I'm going to give one thing, Francis. When I was in Ranger School, we were cleaning weapons, and the firing pin, retention pin from my M4 was not on, got in my hat when I was done cleaning. Big old fuck up. Now, if I'd lost the firing pin, that's a huge problem. Because if I understand correctly, and I am not a gun fucker, so you got to help me, Francis. If I understand it correctly, in an M4, if you lose the firing pin, well, you're kind of done because it's not really, that whole bolt group has to be replaced. Am I right there?
I think you can get a new firing pin. I mean, because you can buy firing pins online for ARs, so you can replace the actual firing pin. They're all pretty much stock. I mean, every part of an M16 can swap out with any other part of an M16.
Okay. As far as I know. I couldn't remember what the truth was. I think the one thing that maybe the difference is when you're in a training scenario in the Army, the firing pin is a thing that has to be ordered, whereas a firing pin retention pin, which is just like a tiny little hair clip that holds the firing pin in the bolt, that is an expendable item. That nobody cares. Those aren't tracked. So I was like, oh God, I'm fucked. Instead, one of my Ranger student friends who knew it had been recycled and knew the cadre who worked in the arms room just went in and was like, hey man, can you give me a firing pin retention pin? And he did, and it solved the problem. And in a combat situation, like, there are solutions to problems that don't involve you basically getting hazed to death. Like, you can fix problems. Like, if you lose something, you can probably replace it unless it's like a critically failed kind of thing. And so that's not to say, okay, don't have any discipline. I get it. But obsessing over it to the point where you're literally making people want to kill themselves, especially in the long-term aggregate stress situation of a deployment, it just seems counterproductive. And like, when I think about, I'll sometimes have dreams that I'm back in the Army. Like, seriously, I'll dream that I'm in the Army, and I'll wake up in the... And in my dreams, I'm often happy to be back. I'm excited to be back, you know? Or I'm a little nervous. Like, I had a dream one time that I'd sneaked back onto Fort Bragg or to Camp McCall, and I just sneaked back into the SFQ course. And in my dream, I was like, hell yeah, okay, I'm gonna get away with this shit. Badass. I'm gonna get through the Q course. When I woke up in the morning, I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad that was a dream. I don't want to be back. And the reason I don't want to be back, and the reason why, you know, in my waking life, I don't want to be back, it's because you have no recourse when someone loses their mind at you about that kind of shit, especially in a combat arms unit where the whole concept of like, you can't talk to me that way hasn't caught on yet. Like, you can't say, go fuck yourself. You can't quit. You can't storm. Like, your options are to just stand there and get your ass kicked, or not literally, but metaphorically, or freak out and then potentially go to jail for what you do.
At least, I don't wear the uniform very often since I'm a reservist, but like, at least once or twice a year, I will, like, while I'm in uniform, doing whatever, sitting around, smoking, joking, doing PMCS, doing Army shit, I will have a momentary just like, where the fuck is my weapon? Shit. Like, I haven't carried a weapon on a regular basis since 2010, but like, that's still, and it's less and less now, but every once in a while, I just get that, like, you do that, like, that grab, like grasping your chest, like for your rifle sling. You're just like, where the fuck did I put it down? Did I leave it in a porta potty? Oh no, that's right. I haven't been deployed in forever. But no, go ahead.
I was going to tell a story about chicken shit though, and one of the funniest things I remember. I mean, it's funny and sad, and I have to give you a little bit of a disclaimer here that I don't know if it's true or not. Because once again, like all of the best Army stories, this didn't happen to me, but I heard it from a friend who apparently heard it from someone who said it was true. And, you know, we've been talking about this today about Sergeant's Major ripping your ass and the stupidity about little things like, oh, your uniform's too dirty, even though we're in like a sandy desert, you're not allowed to come in the chow hall. So I was deployed. I was deployed to combat once to Afghanistan in 2009 to 2010. And while I was there, when I first got there, the regional command and the whole combined joint task force that ran things in RC East or Regional Command East in Eastern Afghanistan was based out of Bagram Airfield, which, like Francis said, is a big enough base in Afghanistan that like you salute people there, which we didn't do when I first got to the battalion sized base I was at until later. So Bagram is Pogue Central. I mean, Bagram has, I mean, like, I remember just being taken aback by how many civilians, how many dumpy reservists, no offense, Francis, how many, like, 70-year-old airmen I would see. Like, just, it was ridiculous. It was all Frumpistan. And as we were, as I was there, I mean, you'd notice that there were people driving around in John Deere Gators with PT belts, like, giving out tickets to cars for speeding. Like, there were all these anecdotes about how, I mean, they literally have MPs giving speeding tickets. They have people giving people tickets for like not wearing the right uniform. I mean, I remember coming off of a like really quick R&R thing where I was able to like, I had to do some stuff at Bagram administratively, and I was able to go get like a smoothie at this place and like at the food court, just seeing like people hanging out in their PTs who look like they haven't been dirty in their life. Like, it's a whole different world. So my friend was an intel officer in our battalion, and he heard this story from somebody who worked at Combined Joint Task Force 82nd Operations in their G2 or their Task Force Intelligence Group. So they had taken, the 82nd had come in midway through our deployment and taken it over, their head shed had taken it over from the 101st. And the 82nd is very famous for being really big on chicken shit. So I'm at Bagram in September, I think. I'm helping, trying to find an ANP, an Afghan National Policeman, who got wounded in a firefight on Election Day and whose commander is trying to find him and whose commander my battalion commander respects a lot. Can't find him because nobody knows where he is. Turns out he was dead. He had died at a hospital in Kabul and they found his body later. But I was kind of traipsing around Bagram trying to find this. And I remember people telling me a week before I got there, there was a couple that was deployed together. They were married. They were joint deployed. Husband was inside their bee hut. Wife was out smoking a cigarette out front. Rocket hit the bee hut, killed the husband. Wife survived. So big old tragedy. I mean, it's just nuts. And don't discount for Fobbits. We make fun of them, but like they had 252 millimeter rockets in Iraq. I mean, those things are fucking like rail cars getting shot at you. So, I mean, even if you live on a base, it's still dangerous. So anyway, my friend who talks to this buddy at CJTF 82's G2 cell, and he's like, dude, you're not going to believe this. We had intel on that attack. We had a reliable source who said that there was some people who were trying to shoot a rocket into Bagram. They had a general idea of where it was going to be at, like where the rocket was going to shoot from. They had a general idea of when it was going to be. They knew the guy who had it. And sure enough, when it went down, it was on this, in this general area of this mountain where they thought it was going to happen, right about the time when they said it was probably going to happen. And my friend was like, what? Well, then they should have been watching that. Like, why didn't they make that a named area of interest and scan it? Because they have these huge, like, cell phone tower cameras that, like, you know, have what they call a FLIR. It's an infrared optic. Can give like a 10-digit grid to anything. It's super amazing technology for like optics and observation. Has a thermal camera, has a night vision camera. I mean, like, you have a couple of these eye of gods on your fob. Like, you can scan around, you'll see stuff if you're looking in the right place. And this guy told my friend, he's like, yeah, the problem is when the 82nd took over, they made us turn all the eyes of God, all of the raid towers in on Bagram so they can spot people not wearing their PT belts at night and give them tickets.
I
don't know if it's true or not, but it was treated like it was a true story. I'm just going to say.
I mean, considering when I was in Afghanistan, they used the big blimp with the FLIR on it to catch people fucking cows. You know, I don't doubt it, but at least we were pointing it outwards. Jesus. So,
did you ever have to go run down the blimp when the blimp got unrigged and like sailed away and then crashed?
No, that was not my fucking job to fucking chase after that
bullshit. There are people who have many stories about how the blimp with the eye in the sky got unrigged and like crashed somewhere, and their job was to go find this runaway blimp. Like, this did happen in the war.
Yeah. So for me now, my story is it's not really secondhand because it came from the guy who claimed that it happened, and he's a guy that I don't know. As a liar, like maybe he embellishes some things a few times, but he's, you know, as anybody who puts the uniform on does. So this was Iraq 2005. My unit went to Iraq. I didn't go because I had just gotten back from Afghanistan, and they were going within, you know, for reservists, if you get deployed, you have a year that the Army will not deploy you again. You can volunteer for a deployment, but you don't have to go. So it was within that year. So my unit didn't take me along with them. But I was talking to the guy after they got back. So he said that they were taking their Humvee up to one of the fuel points. And these are, you know, the old Humvees, the green ones with the cloth doors and shit on it before we had armor and stuff. And so to get up onto the thing, they have, you know, if the big fuel points on the main bases, they were on, Biop at the time, which is Baghdad International. So they were in Baghdad at the time. And so usually at this point, the fuel points are really big. They're, you know, giant trucks. They've got a whole system. Like, you know, the fuelers, like I make fun of fuelers a lot because it just seems like, you know, you need to go to school to fucking pump gas. But like, when you see a fuel point like really done well, you're like, oh, okay, I get it. And you know, they have to, you know, it's not, they, you can't just roll up there and get some gas. Like, there's a lot of procedure that goes behind it. But you know, a really well put together fuel point is kind of a thing of beauty. So they come up to the fuel point, and apparently they had a bunch of plywood up on top of all of the fuel hoses. So they just drove up on top of it to go get fueled up. And they didn't usually come to the fuel point. They maybe went to another one. But so some staff sergeant comes out yelling, the signs, you can't see the signs. You can't be driving on top of this ship, blah, 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 blah. Just going off on them, screaming at them. And these guys, it was an E4 and an E3. So when staff sergeant comes and starts fucking yelling at you, only thing you can do is lock up. Now, the thing about public affairs is that, for the most part, we're a little more intelligent and a lot more of, I don't want to say assholes.
Smartasses?
Smartasses is the way to go with that, yes. We're very good at thinking on our feet and being a smartass at the same time. So this guy says, sorry, Sergeant. You know, we were told that we needed to get up here, and from the Sergeant Major. The Sergeant Major told us to come on up here. The Staff Sergeant's like, "Fuck, which Sergeant Major told you this?" He's like, "Well, Sergeant Major both of these. We can go, you know, we can go ahead and bring him out to the fuel point if you need." He's like, "Oh, well, if Sergeant Major says it, fine. Just get your fucking fuel and get out of here and don't drive up on top of here anymore." So they get their fuel, they fuck off, and the E3 looks at the E4 and says, "Who the fuck is Sergeant Major Beaufortes?" And the E4 looks at me and says, "Fucking Beaufortes nuts, bitch."
Wow, and I didn't even see that one coming.
Yeah, and I was just like fucking in awe of this kid. I was like, "You fucking pulled a Beaufortes nuts joke on a staff sergeant and like made it into a sergeant major." He's like, "Come on, man, think of all the fucking fucked up last names that you hear while you're in Iraq and Afghanistan, because everybody's from everywhere. Like Sergeant Major Beaufortes, yeah, he's a Virgin Islander. I don't know. Nobody's gonna. That's amazing. Yeah, nobody's gonna make it like, "Oh, I'll go wake up the sergeant major right now if you want him to come out and yell at you, staff sergeant. Oh no, get your gas and get on out here. I don't want to piss off Sergeant Major Beaufortes."
That is true too. You encounter some really fucked up names. I remember I actually was a summary court martial officer for a kid who did some dumb crimes in Korea, and one of the witness statements in his case, the guy who wrote it, his last name was Meat Yard. So I was just like, "Bro, did they really do that to you at Ellis Island, that they just decided to translate your name that way? I mean, come on. They could have just left it in the original, like, Estonian or whatever the hell." But yeah, his last name was Meat Yard.
All right, so in the course of this, Adrian's potato battery running his router finally dropped off, and we lost him completely. So he will be hopefully back in the United States soon. And taking care of that, but I think that's a good place to leave it off for today. Keeping
so everybody, if you're listening, today. If you're listening, everyone, just bear in mind that you can follow me at In These Deserts. You can follow Francis at Army Strang, and you can follow Adrian on Instagram at presumptuous_nominee. We have a Patreon running. We're still trying to tick forward in progress to the point where if we can make $5,000 a month, we're going to have a live show in New York. And a couple of other things, too. So we have a website called, it's Hell of a Way to Die, isn't it? Hell of a Way to Die.com,
yep.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's only the finest circa 2009 web design, but we're looking at trying to write more content for us. So if you ever have any questions for us, if you want to just shoot it to us via, you know, at me on Twitter, shoot Francis a DM, ask Adrian on Instagram. But what we can do is answer those questions both in written form and also on the show. So we are here to serve you, to provide you with all the information you request about leftism, the military, and general fuckery whilst wearing a uniform. So tell me what you want to hear, and I'll let you know.
Yeah, I really want to do a mailbag episode. And I know we promised to do an Afghanistan episode, too, and then we never followed through with that. So I think at this point we're becoming slightly less angry online. So maybe we can, you know, rather than be mad about politics, we can, you know, actually have a episode dedicated to some actual shit.
Yeah, and just so you're tracking, too, I mean, I had a sergeant major who once told me that follow-through is the hardest thing in the military, and apparently it's the hardest thing in life. So as we are human, we're trying to improve as we go. So just let us know what we should talk about.
Yeah, what's important is that we're still doing this once a week. That I'm very proud of us for that, and that's probably a lot because we do make a little bit of money off of this, so everybody is motivated to get, you know, every Sunday, get up on it. Let's do this recording.
Hey, man. At some point, it's going to be paying off Francis's mortgage, so that's just what we got to do.
Whew. Somebody needs to pay that shit off. Okay, thank you all, and we will talk to you next week.